Hello and welcome to the Classic Car Weekly podcast, the sibling podcast to the popular weekly title. I'm this week's host, Jesse Billington, the staff writer, and I'm joined by our content editor, James Peen, for this one. It's going to be a short one as we're on a very short production week. But James, how are you? And importantly, how are the classics?
Hello. No, I'm all good. Thank you very much. I think we're the two most organised out of everybody because we've got time on this Thursday afternoon before Easter to have a little chat, but yeah, we're all good.
Did you get any work done to the cars over the weekend? Because I know you had sort of touted the potential opportunity to do it if the weather was kind, but did you get much done?
I got some done. I switched tactics from the Beetle to working on the van because the weather was quite nice, so removed the rusty crash bars along the bottom sills, which pretty much disintegrated as I took them off. Fought for about an hour with a couple of seize bolts, got them off, they're now at the tip, and then sanded down a few bits of ropey body work, a little bit of filler work, some primer, and it's ready for some paint, hopefully this weekend if the weather stays nice.
Fingers crossed for it. I don't think it's supposed to be quite as warm and sunny as it was last weekend, but it's supposed to at least be dry, I think, is what I've heard so far, but we'll see how that pans out. Yeah, but progress is good progress at least.
Yeah, and I've got a few leads on some bits of the Beetle as well. There's a company that does a dynamator, which would solve my charging issues for the Beetle, although it's £239. So I'm going to have to squirrel some pennies away for that. But then if I do that, and I'm still waiting for my registration docs from the DVLA, that's coming up to 4 weeks now, which I believe is like the lead time. And then it should be drivable-ish at some point in the not-too-distant future.
Ah, promising. So it'll be ready for summer then?
Yeah, a summer.
Yeah, maybe this summer, maybe the next summer. We'll see. Yeah.
It's only been 5 years since I got that car, so I'm in no rush.
Yeah, I was going to say, at this point, there's no real sort of time limit on it if you've had it for five. Yeah, I mean, it was a good weekend, actually. I wasn't expecting to need the sun cream I'd brought with me to Goodwood because everyone had been like, oh, it's supposed to cloud over. Oh, it's supposed to start raining. I was like, I don't know. Forecasters still say it could be a bit sunny for the weekend. So I sort of last minute grabbed a bottle of SPF and was quite pleased that I needed to crack it out, actually, on the Saturday. It was toasty through most of the day and Sunday wasn't too bad either, really.
It looked a great weekend from what I've seen online.
Yeah, I mean, it was action-packed, that's for certain. I mean, we'll jump into the members' meeting stuff now. I was hoping to have got a bit of stuff about Alpine. They were celebrating 70 years of that. And they did have 70 Alpines going around the circuit, but it was mostly all the new A110s and A110Ss, which, fine, but it's hardly a story for CCW, so that was a bit of a drop there. But, I mean, there were some other great bits and pieces. I mean, the full coverage is up in this week's issue out on shop shelves at the moment. There was the just all the general racing action. The GT3 shootout was really interesting. Some sort of modern-ish, almost not quite classics, sort of taking to the track from sort of their old motorsport days, which is quite fun to see. And drivers really giving it a go in those. They were on the limit, especially the GT3 Camaro. Frank Stippler on the edge with that, constantly fighting for traction. Bruno Senna out in his uncle's Formula One car from his first win at Estoril, 40 years on, I think it is now, for that. And they got a few laps in. Unfortunately, being a 1980s Formula One car, it also proved to be a bit of a tricky customer. It sort of spun part of the linkage that runs its oil pump, so starved itself of oil. So thankfully, a rather quick-witted Bruno turned the car off before he did any major damage. And I think, last heard from Lotus Classic, they'd managed to track down the one remaining bearing they need to reassemble the oil pump so it works. So they've been able to pick that up, have that air freighted. I think they had it air freighted to the UK quickly, rebuilt the car, and have now got it shipped out to Estoril to go and do a sort of proper on-the-day historic sort of recreation of Senna's run. So that was a story that actually developed after the weekend, more so than the cross it. But it was great to see sort of Bruno there again with one of his uncle's engineers from that first win on Lotus's original F1 team. So it was great having a chat with Chris Dinage about sort of the fact that Senna's sort of legacy still lives on, and the fact that it's mad that he's back with the car and we're still sort of honouring it, which is quite good fun. And then just sort of a few other great bits from the weekend, seeing CEO of Ford Motor Company out in a GT40, sustainable fuels making a great sort of run across the weekend, no one really having any major issues with those. And all in, it proved to be a just another sort of corker of a weekend, just sort of the exact level you'd expect from Goodwood. And of course, we were talking just before we started recording about the SF Edge Trophy and Mark Walker's shunt in that 200 horsepower Dirac, which was shocking to watch firsthand. And then you sort of blink, and he stood up at the side of the circuit looking at a pile of things that once resembled a racing car. And you're sort of going, how did you do that? You were thrown out of the car, landed on your back on top of the tire wall, and now you're just sort of stood there looking mildly perplexed that your car is now disassembled. So that was the really impressive thing. If you've not seen the footage of it, I think it's out on Goodwood's YouTube channels now. So go and have a dig it up, look for the SF Edge Trophy race from the Sunday and watch it. It's an impressive crash, and it's more impressive that he walked away from it.
It's one of those things as well, I think, that something like the members meeting, you see those cars being used how they're meant to be used. So if someone has a prang in it, it is quite catastrophic, but also it's what they were meant to be about, isn't it?
Yeah, they all of these cars are sort of sports racing cars. They were specials. They were built in period to go racing or to set land speed records in the case of things like the Beast of Turin. And they are still used for that. And many of these guys drive them across Europe to take them to. There's a series of races for these veteran sports cars out in Europe as well. There's one popular one in France that they sort of regularly trek out to. And I think, can't remember if it's the Dirac or the Sunbeam, that like companies, or possibly a Peugeot or something, that companies have tried to buy off of them to put into historic collections. They've gone, no, I'm just going to keep using it and driving it and racing it and then driving it all the way back to the UK. I think Duncan is sort of famous for taking the Beast of Turin and just driving it to whatever event it needs to be at, which is insane considering it's something like a 40-litre inline four-cylinder engine that revs to 1,000 RPM.
Yeah, I'm sure you feel the same way as I do, but I'd much rather see something like that being used than in someone's collection, sort of gathering dust, not turning a wheel.
Oh yeah, I'd much rather see it being used. And also I know that, especially when it comes to the VSCC guys, they are so passionate about using and showcasing the cars, and they don't mind them getting used and a little bit abused. And I know that sort of speaking to some of the other racers around the paddock after that incident, they said, oh yeah, we've already spoken to Mark. He's going to be back with it next year. Like rebuilding's already, he's already sort of figuring out how he's going to rebuild it, because it is a very quick and very competitive car. I think it's always sort of a front runner alongside Julien Majoub in the Sunbeam Indianapolis. Like those two are the quick cars. The Dirac is a bit harder to get off the line because it's got such a steep gear ratio. But once it's up to speed, it's good. I think that was the thing that really bit him when he was a bit wide on the grass, was just all of a sudden the engine came on song, developed all of its torque, and just simply sent it straight to a live rear axle with no differential. And yeah, it's nearly unrecoverable at that point.
I mean, watching the footage of that, you can see it's all going sideways, isn't it? As he goes into that, but you think that's not going to end well.
Yeah, he was pushing hard because I think they were down to, I think they were coming onto the last lap of that race that he had an opportunity to actually catch and overtake Julian in. So he was really going for it. And people go, oh, they're all the classic cars, they're not really trying. No, they are trying in these. And we saw some great examples of that across the weekend. The two DB4 GTs, the Dario Franchitti and Harrison Newey cars at the front of the Moss Trophy, were on the limit of traction the entire way around the circuit. Both cars just perfectly sort of power sliding in sort of harmony. Another great one was the Gurney Cup, which, while it was sort of run under safety car for a lot of it, annoyingly, the final 20 minutes turned out to be a bit of a sprint race after they essentially sort of stopped the entire race, did the driver change on the grid, and then set off again. Because the Ferrari 206S, I think it's a Dino technically, was at the back of the field by this point. But it had qualified quite well. Its first driver just hadn't had a great amount of success in the field. So when they swapped in German touring car ace Frank Stippler, all of a sudden, sort of fortune turned around, and this guy was sort of overtaking two or three cars a corner and went from back of the field to the lead and the win in that car. And it was incredible to watch. And I watched that one, pretty much stood in the pit building, just sort of watching on the big screen, just as the cars would sort of come thundering past. And each time you'd hear sort of the wail of 2.4 GT V8s and a couple of the sort of other cars coming through, usually a Chevron or something. And then you'd get the distinct note of the Ferrari come through. And each time the Ferrari would come through, and you'd hear it a bit sooner and a bit sooner. And it was, you were sort of like, oh, he's making progress, he's making progress. And it was just one of those things you go, he is not holding back. Admittedly, that car, I think, is technically a sort of recreation or a historic homage to the original car, because the original ones are squillions of pounds, and I don't think you'd be pushing them quite that hard. But the GT40s and the Chevrons certainly are the original historic machines, and no holds barred.
I mean, someone like yourself as a petrolhead, members meeting, sounds like you enjoyed an awful lot of racing this that weekend.
Oh yeah, the amount of racing you get and the amount of on-track action. If you just like cars going fast and you like cars properly on the edge going fast, nothing else really comes close. That's why I enjoy classic racing, is because the cars always have such a lower threshold of traction. You just get that bit more action. I think that's why a lot of the touring car drivers like it as well, because it's very similar to BTCC in the fact that there isn't that sort of stratospheric level of grip that you get from F1 and IndyCar and sort of the upper echelons of GT3 racing. You have to actually drive the cars to get the most out of it. Jake Hill absolutely loves coming back to Goodwood. He's BTCC champion. I think he's back to back at the moment. And he won the Win Percy trophy, Ford Escort RS 2000, and was again having a whale of a time doing it. And again, really good race against a three-time Le Mans winner, Andre Lotterer, in a Volkswagen Golf GTI. So it's drivers really going for it, and they are going for it for personal glory. And as a result, you get that sort of really high level of excitement. It's just sort of one of those things that I get a bit too excited about and talk a bit too long about. But anyway, that's a bit of a scoop from behind the scenes at the Goodwood weekend. Obviously, hung around on the Saturday night as well for the fireworks, which is quite nice. And all in, just a really sound weekend. If you're ever contemplating doing members meeting, give it a go at least once, I'd say. The bug will bite. And I think they've already announced tickets or sale dates for tickets and the dates for next year as well. So now's the time to sort of put it on the to-do list and put it on the shopping list.
Yeah, it's on my to-do list for next year, definitely.
Maybe we'll swap out who gets to go along and write about it. We'll see if I want to relinquish the page space.
I don't think we should make you relinquish that. You're too enthusiastic.
I just love it too much. It'd be like asking me to not do Silverstone Festival. It'd be exactly the same problem. I'm like, oh, but I enjoy it. I just like sort of, if you just sort of left me with my camera and a photographer's tabard, I'd happily spend the entire 2 days just walking laps of the circuit, taking photographs of everything, and then come back with sort of like 8 terabytes of images to sort through before press day. I think I was up till 2 a.m. on Monday getting everything turned around, so we were ready to go. So, but yeah, I do it out of the passion more than anything. I think that's the important point. Anyway, from one man's collection of photographs to one man's collection of cars, and this is our lead news story this week, which is a barn find stash that's come up for sale.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, we get shared an awful lot of barn finds, and we find a lot ourselves, but something of this sort of magnitude in England's quite a rare thing. So this is a Tewkesbury Auction Centre are selling a once-in-a-lifetime haul of British classics. They conservatively said it was 170 to start with, but it's now looking like more than 200 from one man's collection in South Gloucestershire. So it's one of those things as well. It's like one of the worst kept secrets as well, because people have known about it for quite a long time. I know Urban Explorers have posted videos of it on YouTube, and our own Danny Hopkins, editor of Practical Classics, visited it himself back in 2013. So it's one of those things that people have known about, but the fact that it's come to light now and that everything's for sale is quite big news.
I've had a flick through on Tewkesbury Auction Centre's Facebook page. They've got a lot of photographs up on there of a few things that are floating around, but I'm waiting for the full list to come out, because the pictures, I don't think, do justice to quite the scale of it. Until you see sort of like a full itemised list, you're not going to really realise exactly what's hiding in this. I mean, we get the odd barn find come through. Anglia car auctions have a bit of a knack of digging them up, but not sort of nearly 200 or so in one go is incredible. Plus, it's all the motoring ephemera that's going with it. It's all the road signs, the pumps, the bits and pieces, the parts, the body panels that are sort of also in this bundle. It's incredible. Has there been anything that's jumped out to you as sort of an absolute must-have out of this barn find collection, if you had the time and the money to resurrect a barn find?
Oh, I mean, it's not that far away from me. It's about an hour and a bit's drive, and I'm kind of tempted to go along on the sale day just to have a bit of a nose around to see what there is. I mean, I haven't got the funds for buying anything, never mind the, you know, the logistics of getting a barn find home. But there's all manner of stuff in there. series Land Rovers, they always take my eye. There's a couple of old Fords in there. There's Aston Martin DBS, which
I did see the picture of that, which looks quite clean actually.
And it's in race car red, which always adds value.
Yeah, it's not a common colour for those Astons, and it looks good in that colour. Is it a Vantage spec one, or is it regular? That's the real question. That's the one for the proper Aston Martin DBS nerds.
Yeah, I mean, talking to the MD of the auction company, Finlay, he was saying that when we spoke to him, they still hadn't quite got to grips with how much stuff there was there. They were still dragging things out of barns. And it's not just the stuff in the barn as well. There's all the outbuildings, there's fields full of stuff, there's stuff in hedges. It's quite overgrown, and it's quite sad to see stuff in this state, but it's also quite an exciting opportunity for someone to buy a project.
If you're looking to sort of buy a project that will sort of keep you occupied as sort of essentially a new hobby, I think you're spoiled for choice. I mean, there's a lot of Jaguars in there as well. I mean, you and I are both have a bit of a soft spot for sort of the early Mark Ones and things. So there's just a lot to go through. There's also a couple of American bits in there. I think I've definitely seen a Cadillac in there, and possibly a Buick Riviera, I think it was, that I saw poking out from a corner. So it's not just like it's one person who's just collected a large amount of British Leyland stuff. There's also like Peugeot 205s and stuff in there.
I think isn't there like a Chevy Biscayne there as well? I've seen outside 58 or something like that, some sort of Chevy with the big sideways wings. So you say it's a really eclectic collection of like cool stuff that the vendors built up over many, many years, and it's just decided actually now's the time to move on. So hence everything's going to go.
Just fired up the Facebook page for it to have a quick look. There's the Aston Martin DBS. There's one of the Cadillacs. Lovely. There is the Morris. There's five-door Range Rover there. There's definitely a TR7 tucked at the back of that one, a couple of MGBs. That looks like an Ashley hardtop for an MG midget as well, and they are worth a pretty penny, especially if that's in good condition. Alfa Romeo Spider, Mercedes SLK, Bentley Flying Spur, I think that is. Porsche 924, a couple of old standards, E-type bonnets. Like, it's a bafflingly broad collection. TVRs as well floating around in there. It's just so much. I implore you to, if you are listening to this, go and have a look on Tewkesbury Auction Centre's Facebook page. It's their sort of most recent post, and it is just an enormous collection of photographs. There's the series Land Rovers. We've got those are twos looking at the hinges. Old 306. So many Jaguars. Old
Bedford van in there as well. That's reclaimed by the Ivy. It's just a baffling collection of stuff. And say it's so rare to see a collection of that magnitude for sale in this country.
Yeah. There's also an ambulance floating around somewhere. Is that an Aston or the Jag? I think that's a Jaguar XK that's just covered in brambles. Some of these projects you'd really need to know your onions, know where you're starting with them. BMW 635 CSI. That's such a fantastic sort of sports coupe. And it's just sort of slowly mouldering away behind an ambulance and in front of what looks like an MGB. I mean, I'm certain that the license plate on that Jaguar XJS is probably worth a pretty penny. 3TV, that's going to be worth something.
And according to the auction house, it's all got to go. So there's no reserves on most of it. I know there's a couple of cars that the owner kind of knows the values, and so he won't let them go for nothing. Probably like the Aston Martin, for example. But by and large, it's all just got to go, to clear the site. So if you're there on the day and in person, because it is an in-person auction, there's nothing at all being sold online, then there's every likelihood that you could come away with something, a lot of work indeed, but you're going to come away with something. And good day out anyway. I think for somebody like us to have a nose around abandoned classics like that, that's an interesting day's work.
Yeah, apparently that Chevrolet looks to me like a 59 Impala, and it's right-hand drive, so someone's done a lot of work to it to convert that. So that's...
I'm just going through my note, you were right, it is a 59. There we go.
Yeah. That's a beautiful car. I absolutely love the rear end on those. But also, how does something like that just become sort of abandoned in a yard with so much other stuff.
I don't think we've got the full story of why this chap collected these things over the years, what his plans were for it. Is it just something that just happened? Yeah, you know how it goes. You buy a car, then you buy another one, and then you put them in a storage room, and then you park another one in front of it, and the ones at the back get forgotten, and then you get more and more, and eventually everything just gets left, doesn't it?
Yeah, you sort of think, I will get to that. I mean, I have had that exact fear about my MG sort of going, oh, I will get around to building the engine up for that. I will get around to building the engine up for that, because at the moment it's sort of out of sight, out of mind, tucked away in the workshop. And I've had other things that have needed doing. So I can, to a very large extent, understand sort of how this happens. But that's with one car. I don't get how you'd go to that extent with 200. Like, surely at some point, when you buy, like, your third MGB, you must go, I'm fairly certain I already have one of these somewhere.
I don't know. It's one of those things that how far can you push it? If you've got the space and, you know, the means to do it, then you would, wouldn't you? I know I would.
Oh, I probably would, knowing my ability to sort of buy and forget. It's something that I would potentially do. Is that the grill from Land Rover Discovery 3? I think it is. There's just so much odd stuff bobbing around. That's certainly a Mercedes saloon tucked to the back. Another MGB. Alfa Romeo Spider as well. Late Series 3 by the look of it with the bumpers. It's, yeah.
I mean, even just still the old enamel signs, just... bolted to the side of the barn. I mean, stuff like that's worth a pretty penny, and cool garage ornaments.
Yes, yeah, certainly like the old sort of snapper mowers, tillers and tractors sign is in pretty good nick. Again, all the old pub signs as well. Is that a TVR Chimera? I think it's got to be a Chimera looking at that front end. Again, just under an old fitted sheet with a load of ducting shoved on top of it. Yeah. So there's so much choice in there. You're spoiled for choice, but again, I think even if you're looking for like parts and bits, you could do quite well. I fear how much of it's going to be bought by like set dressers for TV and film, because they're going to use a lot of that for sort of littering about the place. But yeah,
I suppose the upside to that though is whoever buys it hopefully will do something with it, or at least put it in the dry somewhere so it's not just going to continue to deteriorate. Because from what Danny said when he visited back in 2013, it's gone downhill quite a bit since then. There was a lot of viable classics projects that now are probably a little bit too far gone, but that's just one of the things. And once someone starts hoarding and it gets on top of you, sadly. Yeah.
Like looking at the Jensen Healey that's parked up. I mean, they weren't great for rot in the first place, and this one obviously hasn't been stored in the best conditions, and you can see it's missing panels already, and it's just starting to sort of dissolve away a bit. And you look at the blistering creeping up the side of a 500 SL Mercedes parked next to it, you're going, that's a lot of metalwork to sort out. But
I mean, they've added more photos since we wrote the story, and just looking at what's been added, just amazing stuff. Apparently it's not just from one site. Most of the photos have come from one site so far, but there's another site with more classics that say they're digging out as we speak. So who knows what's going to come to light.
The story develops. I mean, is that an NSU or DAF 33, I think that is, parked next to another Bentley by the look of that headlight. 944s. It's just, you could be here for ages looking through all the photographs trying to identify bits. I mean, it's perfect for if you watch any of Johnny Smith's sort of barn find videos, he could have an absolute field day. He'd have like a full year's worth of content going through here. But that Morris Minor must have been on the road relatively recently, given the fact that it's got a black and white plate on the front of it. Last tax 1989, maybe not then.
Well, there you go. You say recently, and you think, yeah, 1989. For me, that's not that long ago, but actually, yeah, it's like 30 odd years, isn't it? It's like, yeah, getting to 40 years. Yeah, that's old.
It's been there for quite a while. Oh, my God. I do wonder how much of this stuff is actually able to be resurrected. That's the really big question, or how much of this is too far gone. Like, what percentage of these cars and vehicles are going to go back on the road?
I suppose it's the opposite to the whole Rudy Klein scrapyard that we covered a little while ago. You know, all the Porsches.
Yeah.
I mean, all that stuff, you know, the value of that, of those cars, they're going to get restored. You know, the Lamborghinis and the 356s, someone somewhere is going to do something with those. Whereas this, I don't know, I think everyday British classics, left to rot. I mean, there's a, you could go and buy a nice MG or you could buy a rot box. It's one of those things that on the day, if it's cheap enough and you've got them, you would do it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, if you've already got like a good collection of spare parts, you're relatively au fait with sort of rebuilding, say, MGBs or midgets, and you've got a lot of the bits you need might need already, you can do the welding, you can do sills, then all of a sudden like an 80 quid MGB makes a hell of a lot of sense. But sort of going out and just sort of as a rookie hosing money into something on that scale, you've got to know, you, yeah, you, it's a big ask.
I mean, we've only spent like 5 minutes just looking for it for this chat, but you immediately found a hardtop for an MG midget. You know, so that's, yeah, that's something you'd come away with. And then if you're there, you might as well put your hand in your pocket and buy a few more bits and pieces. Why not a whole car if you're taking a trailer?
I mean, the Pirelli tyres sign does look quite nice. I don't need it, but it would look quite nice in a workshop. I can't tell why that Ford Escort, I think it is sat on what looks like Alfa Romeo Pepperpot wheels. Because they're not original, what would have been Fiesta pepper pots. Again, a lot of baffling choices. Is that a Vauxhall Frontera as well, shoved next to an L322 Range Rover? Again, MGA tucked there, what looks like another Eldorado. It's such a baffling collection. I can't wait for the auction to go off on this. Well, we haven't actually said what the auction date is for it yet. It is 28th of June.
28th of June. There will be a couple of viewing dates beforehand, and they will release the venue location prior to the viewing days. Just at the moment, obviously, it's a secret, so they don't want people to be sniffing around any more than need to. So definitely one to watch.
There's certainly one to keep an eye on. Perhaps we'll see if we can commission you to actually head up and sort of bring us an inside scoop as to what's going on.
I wouldn't say no to that. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sure David is already mulling over that as an idea. Anyway, that's our lead story from this week's issue. There's been a fair few other stories actually shoved into this week's paper. Obviously, I took out most of 4 or 5 to do the members meeting, but I was talking to Tony Jardine from Hero ERA across the weekend as well, and was saying about how well Flying Scotsman's done their rally up in Scotland was, and how well it was received with sort of a younger audience this year as well, which was great to see. And the fact that so many of their rallies are booking out early, even things like 2028's Peking to Paris, is sort of a huge sign-up sheet for that at the moment. So it's looking like a good time for classic rallying and getting younger people into it. So there's plenty more news to pick up. Are there any stories that jumped out to you this week beyond the lead?
It's one of those things. It's like childbirth. I push them out and then I move on to the next one. So I know there's always a lot going on in CCW, isn't there? News-wise, it's like it's the place to go.
It certainly is. We've got 8 pages of fantastic news, plus obviously events, auctions, and our beautiful feature this week, which looks at 70 years of the Sunbeam Rapier, which is a beautiful little car, actually. I quite like the 70s version of that. I can't remember what the 70s spec was called on those. Was it the... the H120, wasn't it? Was the final edition of the Sunbeam Rapier. So, yeah, plenty to enjoy in this week's issue. But like we said at the start, it's a 3-day production week for us. We are all a little bit busy and a little bit under the cosh when it comes to time. So we'll go and crack on with getting some bits ready for next week's issue as well, because that's obviously reduced by the double bank holidays we're sort of in the run-up to. So, James, I'll leave you to crack on. And have you got anything planned for this weekend? A bit more work, or is it just going to be Easter chocolates?
Easter chocolate, dog walked, and hopefully if I can wrangle it some more time out in the cars.
Very nice indeed. I am hopefully finally going to start assembling the engine for the MG. Now I've got a clear 4 days to sort of run at it. We'll maybe get the majority of the work done on that. We'll see how it goes. I don't think it's going to be running for driver day, given the progress so far, but it'll be running for sometime in May, maybe.
Were you planning for driver day this year? Which one are you going to?
I'm off to the Bicester Scramble, actually. I had my ticket arrived for that last night. I emailed their media chap and I was like, oh, by the way. And so I've had my ticket coming for that, which looks is always a great event, to be fair. And I do enjoy the Bicester ones because it's sort of perfectly located for all of my friends from sort of the car photography and car media world to sort of conglomerate to. So it's nice for that. Where are you off to for yours?
I'm doing the Crushbox one again. Last year it was in Dawlish, which is really nice, but they've moved to Teignmouth this year, just down the road. So I should be doing that, and I'll probably take the family as well so they can wander off, do the beach and what have you, and I can wander around and look at cars.
Sounds like the perfect opportunity. Obviously, there are plenty of other options for Drive It Day, and we've got the issue that's coming out or the one we're working on, and we'll go to press later today for the coming Wednesday, we'll have 50 ideas and options and events that are on across Driver Day, from runs and rallies to just simply places that are open for coffees and classic car meets. So be sure to pick that one up and give that a read. But that is all still to come when it comes to Classic Car Weekly. Otherwise, James, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
And of course, we'll be back with a new issue and a new edition of the Classic Car Weekly podcast.